The documentary film Boxed In, produced at Northern Michigan University, attempts to clarify issues and positions related to the controversial dark store method of assessing large franchise businesses. A means of reducing property taxes on so-called big box stores, the method is said to have cost local governments some $200 million since 2010, revenue that would have helped support the infrastructure and services relied upon by businesses and the community. We'll talk about the making of the documentary, update some of the effects of dark store assessments, and discuss pending legislation just ahead on Media Meet. Welcome to a special edition of WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are NMU Communications and Performance Studies Professor Dwight Brady, Marquette Township Manager Randall Girard, and veteran property appraiser Bruce Closser of Marquette. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for the invitation.
First, some basics on the film itself. Dwight, you're the producer-director in Boxed In. Where did the idea for a dark store documentary come from?
Well, my almost next-door neighbor, Greg Seppinen, got a hold of me back in December, and he has been very close to this issue, working with the Marquette County Citizens for a Fair Share.
Okay.
And he said, we're not getting a lot of traction on this down in Lansing, and we just need to expand knowledge of this issue statewide, and can you do a video on this? And I thought, well, maybe we can do like a 5 to 7 minute mini doc in my advanced multimedia journalism class. Well, that 5 to 7 minute mini documentary that turned into a full half hour made for TV documentary, and so about 200 hours later, here we are.
Tell us something about the class itself and student participation in a project like this. How do you handle all the skill requirements of something like this?
Well, the way we built this out is that I would go out with a group of students. We did an interview at Randy's office and a number of offices here locally, just talking with folks. And while we were doing that, I'd send another group out just to shoot some what we call B-roll or footage from the community. So we'd make use of the class time that way. So we spent probably part of the month of March and April just shooting here locally, getting that part of the acquisition done. And then after the semester was over, I took a group of three students down to Lansing where we camped out basically for 4 days. That was our home base, but we shot over in Grand Rapids and Detroit, up in Grand Blanc. And so that was a major part of the acquisition there, just interviewing policymakers, lobbyists, and whoever would talk to us, really.
You were actually in there on the floor, right? Or looking,
yes,
watching
it's
all
House and Senate, and also in the policy hearings as well.
Okay. How was the production set up? What effort and resources did it take to pull that off?
We did this on a very frayed shoestring budget. Basically had a $500 service learning grant from the university. The students, two of the students anyway, they put up GoFundMe pages. So they raised their own support for their travel downstate. They were that committed to this.
Wow.
And I used a little bit of my contractual travel from my AAUP money, but that was it. It was maybe under $1,000 of university money, and that was it.
Okay. So that was the financing on it. Now, the documentary recently had its premiere at a location significant to the narrative, the Peter White Public Library, which was hit hard by that tax tribunal decision. And it was very well received. Public TV 13 viewers have now seen it, or will have seen it as this airs. Any plans for further screenings or distribution of the film?
We're just hoping to utilize the web. Of course, public television stations now, I believe, have the link across the state, so people can access it that way. I built a website called Boxed In. And also, a very important audience for the documentary will be 38 people down in Lansing.
Okay.
And so we'll be trying to get the documentary to them, and so that they can take a look at it and make their own decision as to whether they want to bring their own bill to the floor and vote on it, hopefully before the end of the fall session.
Okay. I would imagine this still has some pedagogic value for future students, right?
Oh, sure. And first day of class, of course, I had to promote my own documentary and tell the students to go see it during the premiere. But also, I pulled out the camera that we use, and it's the same camera that my students use every day in their student productions. It's nothing fancy. It's a $700 video camera. And that's what we shot it with, and plus my iPhone. I shot some footage with that as well. So so we created the whole thing, again, with pretty modest equipment, but I think the result was pretty good.
Let's talk about the business of appraising properties to amplify some of the points in the film. Appraisal from the Latin essentially means to value something.
Yes.
Bruce, you advise clients that property or land valuation is a practice of developing an opinion of the value of real property. Usually it's market value. How much flexibility does one have according to state law in doing that?
Well, there are methodologies that are generally accepted.
Okay.
Through the appraisal professions. State law references these standards. There are actually published standards. The Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice is the main one. Promulgated by an independent organization located in Washington, D.C., the Appraisal Foundation.
Okay.
And so these standards are used by all appraisers. If you're a state-licensed appraiser, you have to follow the standards because state law requires that.
What was the precedent for business property valuations prior to 2010 when the Michigan Tax Tribunal effectively said that properties for operating businesses could be held comparable to business properties now shut down?
Yeah, we should probably make a distinction between business appraisals and real property appraisals.
Okay.
Because we're actually not appraising the business here, we're appraising the real estate in which the business
operates.
Right, the
real property, I get it.
Right, the real property.
Okay.
So it's land and buildings and land improvements that are being valued. Traditionally assessors have used a cost methodology to value properties. It's basically the cost of reproducing this property new, mm-hmm. less whatever types of depreciation the property suffers from, physical depreciation, functional depreciation, economic or external depreciation, mm-hmm. Plus the value of the land. And that gives you an indication of market value. There are other methods, but that's the typical one that appraisers used.
Okay. How common are appeals before the tax tribunal? Are they more frequent than they were in 2010?
For big box stores, they're pretty common
pretty frequent
in Michigan.
Yeah.
It's open season.
Since 2010.
Yeah.
Okay. With a couple of ways traditionally to value business properties, critics say the devil is in the details surrounding the assignment of comparables or comparable value. Isn't this just an empirical question or not?
Well, one of the main
Couldn't
methods
this just be settled with evidence is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, and actually it is. The question is, what constitutes the evidence?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a methodology called the sales comparison approach, where the idea being, if we use a house as an example, you want to have your house valued, the appraiser is going to come and look at your house, and they're going to look for sales of houses that are similar to your house in similar locations that have sold recently and make comparisons. Okay. You know, if a buyer paid X dollars for this house across the street, and it's a little better in this characteristic, not as good in that characteristic, what would your house sell for in light of what other similar houses are selling for?
Okay.
Pretty straightforward method. It follows the thinking of buyers and sellers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it certainly follows the thinking of the people who make these appeals. They want to take a strict property tax approach.
Yeah, so and this works really
it's
well.
It's the property, not the profits that are being taxed.
Exactly, it's the property. In commercial property, it gets a little more complicated because commercial properties don't sell as frequently as residences do.
Okay.
So the population of sales is less. They tend to vary more in their physical characteristics than residences do. So sometimes it's very difficult to find good sales in similar locations of properties like the one you're appraising. Sometimes there aren't enough good sales to make a valid approach, so you can't use a sales comparison approach. Sometimes the sales are just not good. So the essence of this particular argument mm-hmm. is what constitutes a good comparable sale.
Okay, and that's what we're facing right now, trying to adjust in terms of legislation. Dwight, you said the documentary should be objective, but with sides fairly apart, how do you stay objective in telling the story of dark store appeals and their consequences?
Right. Of course, you always come to something with your own biases. I mean, you're never totally objective, but I made a conscious effort to bring in other voices to this, and that was the hardest part, getting someone from the, I guess, the other side of the townships and municipalities to come forward and speak. The law firms didn't want to talk to us. The big box folks, they didn't want to talk to us.
That's typical.
Yeah, and so we wound up, fortunately, Tricia Kinley from the Michigan Chamber of Commerce stepped forward and did a great job in her interview. Stephen Lasher, the current chair of the Tax Tribunal, agree with him or not. I mean, he made, you know, some valid arguments so it was great that at least we had some folks stepping forward to provide at least another perspective to this. And also, from a filmmaking standpoint, you want that tension there.
Sure,
you don't want to always just be, you know, just kind of cramming an ideology down someone's throat.
Gotcha. Looking at some consequences of dark store appeals, Marquette Township is probably the case study up here. The ruling upholding a large tax reduction on a Lowe's store here determined any future direction for reform, as the appeals court sided with the tax tribunal. Randy, could you describe the total effect of that ruling, its implications for other communities and businesses?
Well, I guess to start with, I just wanted to throw a little bit of history there along with the Lowe's case. And Bruce was our appraiser in that case and represented us before the tribunal. We were basically dealing with a stacked deck. Before we got down there, we knew that the tribunal was going to rule against us based upon their prior rulings and based upon conversations we had with particularly the judge that was going to hear our case. Okay. So we had made our decision early on that we were going to appeal that to the Court of Appeals, because we had been dealing with this since 2010, watching the impacts of it and communicating with other townships, all of the other townships. In fact, we sent letters to all of the other townships in the state of Michigan and all
and
of the county
support,
boards.
I think, from the Township Association.
We got support from the standpoint of briefs being filed, amicus briefs. The only financial support that we received was $1,200 from Marquette County.
Okay.
So we basically went at this alone. We invested $250,000 in legal fees to get this to the Court of Appeals. Hoping that the Court of Appeals would look a little more objectively and do a little more detail than simply reviewing the record from the Tax Tribunal, which is in fact what they ended up doing. We ultimately wanted to get to the Supreme Court because we felt that this did have statewide impact and would have a fairly dramatic financial impact on the state and particularly local government's ability to provide services going forward. Mm-hmm. Supreme Court declined to hear the case. In their opinion, they didn't feel that it had enough of a significant import to take up.
Okay.
So we went it alone, basically, and the Lowe's case, the case that went forward, set the precedent for the subsequent cases, the other 12 big boxes, with the exception of Walmart. They were the only ones that came to us and said, "We're not going to do this. Mm-hmm. Let's sit down and look at the evaluation." And the way that happens is our assessor doesn't have flexibility in assigning value to a piece of property. Our assessor has a manual that is dictated by the state treasury.
Okay.
And she has to follow that manual. And it mm-hmm. deals with manner of construction, materials of construction, the values of the land, and things such as that to come up with a taxable value. And that's what they did. And round numbers, the Lowe's assessment was somewhere around $62 a square foot. As Bruce had mentioned, with their legal team, they were able to convince the tribunal, and it didn't take very much convincing, to lower that to $25 a square foot. So that was a significant reduction. And that has now spilled over to all of the others who, rightfully so, and we don't blame the businesses at all, never have blamed the business. It's a simple business decision. They're in business to make money and to provide profit for the stockholders. That's their job. And if they
so the tribunal are the people that are responsible.
The tribunal is the party that's responsible for this. In 2010, they departed from what Bruce has just described as the traditional manner of addressing cases. And Kimball Smith, the chief judge at that time, departed from that and went in a radical different direction. And that started this whole thing in Novi.
Let me take just a moment to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners that we're talking about the documentary film Boxed In and the Dark Store Method of Assessment in Michigan with NMU Communication and Performance Studies Professor Dwight Brady, Marquette Township Manager Randy Girard, and Veteran Property Appraiser Bruce Closser. How would you summarize then the effect, you know, the aftermath of this decision now, and what would you predict if nothing is done in the next several years?
Well, I guess I would answer that question in this format. In Marquette Township, for example, we assess and collect all of the taxes for Marquette County from the tax base of Marquette Township. Okay. We then distribute that. It's about roughly 42 mills that people see on their tax bill. Of that 42 mills, 7.5 stays with Marquette Township. The remainder is distributed to the library, to search and rescue, to 911, to MarkTran, to the schools, to the state education fund, wide variety of other entities. So a reduction in taxes in Marquette Township harms us, certainly, but it does much more harm to the broader community. And the library is the first example of that people saw almost immediately because their budget was so tight, they had to reduce services. They closed on Sundays. For our township, I advised my board when this was going on that the residents weren't going to see an impact for probably 2 to 3 years. Well, 2017 is 3 years. And they will be seeing it in the budget. We will be dealing with things. And we have to provide our core services, have to provide our basic services. So the things that will suffer will be recreation, trails, providing pedestrian access, you know, the ancillary things that local governments try to do, law enforcement, the quality and force issues. We contract with the sheriff's department for 80 hours of coverage specifically in the township. That may be in jeopardy.
There was an important youth home that just closed too.
That was in one of the impacts to the county.
So for people who you know might want to say, well, just deny services in those cases where the taxes don't seem to cover those services. You've got police and fire and all those things. What do you say?
We probably will be. Your water's not going to get turned off. Your sewers are going to work. You know, you flush your toilet, it's going to work. Those things are basic core services, health and safety issues that we are going to provide. But you are going to see the fire department is millage driven. It's 2.5 of that seven and a half mills, 2.5 of those are to operate the fire department. That's its only source of revenue. Okay. So as that money is gone, either I have to transfer money from the general fund, which funds all of the other services, to continue that going on. And we will do that. The basic core services we will continue to provide, but people will start to see the Lions Field Recreation Area that we've spent the last 10 years building back up to what it used to be. And now it's a gem that the entire region is using. Is probably going to fall back to disrepair again. We're just not going to be able to fund those kinds of ancillary quality of life, as Bruce mentioned, issues any longer. We'll have to concentrate on the basic core services, health and safety.
Okay. What you said about your experience with the appeals court, it's kind of reflected in a comment from Boxed In. You have, Dwight, you have the current tribunal judge effectively saying local units of government can't afford to fight the big franchises in court because they're outspent every time.
Well, right, you have law firms that come in, they know the drill, and they know what the tribunal is looking for, and they can frame it in a manner that they know they're gonna win. And for a lot of townships, they don't have $200,000 to $300,000 to throw around, you know, on a legal team, where a corporation, that's chump change, I guess, is the slang.
I spend as much as I have to. Go ahead.
The tribunal is supposed to be expert in this. They are a specific type of judge that rules only on tax, property tax valuations.
Okay.
They are supposed to know the law, know the methodologies, know appraisals. When the chief judge says that townships can't afford or municipalities can't afford to present the right case, what he's saying is implying is that they're going to rule in favor of the party with the most money. And they should be smart enough or ethical enough to be able to see beyond that to the merits of the case. And if they're not doing that, then they've failed their public responsibility and they should be ashamed.
Okay.
And I want to add to that a Go little ahead. As well, because basically, you know, dovetailing on what Dwight said is, it's not that the local governments don't want to fight it. We don't have resources.
Yeah.
All that we do is we collect enough to operate the services that we provide. Okay,
sure.
So the taxes that we're collecting this year are to fund next year's operation. We don't have a big savings account sitting anywhere. So when the tribunal rules in this manner, in Lowe's, for instance, it wasn't just reducing the taxes for this year. We also had to refund them the last 3 years of collected taxes, which are not sitting anywhere in an account. That came out of my general fund balance. And that meant that my services in 2015, when this occurred, were reduced. And we had to start reducing the budget then. So beyond the point of that issue, we no longer have the wherewithal that if, let's say, the state of Michigan, we try to have 90 days reserve funds in case, for some reason, revenue sharing or whatever is held up, we can continue to serve. That's gone. That went back to the corporations.
The direction of reform now has to be legislative. That's what we're told. The House passed bill awaiting Senate approval is HB 5578. I'd like to get that something about that in, along with some material about a new appeals court ruling in Escanaba. Sponsored by Republican State Representative Dave Maturin of Vicksburg, who happens to be the only real estate appraiser in the legislature, the bill would require the Michigan Tax Tribunal to determine the highest and best use of a property under review and make sure comparable properties have the same use. So he's trying to bring some order to that process. What does that mean in simplest terms, Bruce?
Well, what we've seen from the property owners' appraisers is the use of properties that were sold for different uses. That is, they were originally big box stores. They went vacant because typically because they were old and obsolete, but sometimes because a retailer closed out a whole division of stores and flooded the market with vacant stores and the market couldn't absorb them, or you know, there was too many, it's an oversupplied market and somebody has to go. I just lost what was the original question?
Yeah, highest and best use.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So we had sales that were, bought for conversion to industrial use.
Okay.
We had sales that were converted, one was converted to a church, one was a go-kart track.
I saw.
Yeah. You know, so this is hardly, what you're doing when you use these sales, you're selecting from a population of troubled properties. So you have selection bias here. You already selected a low value when you start looking at this whole population of sales.
Okay.
Because there are very, very few valid, arm's length, economically viable sales of these properties. Because usually they get closed because there are problems with
them. Do
you
think this legislation is going to do the job? Apparently deed restrictions are included there somewhere. They're going to try and limit deed restrictions.
And that's another big problem
is the
deed restrictions were
leading to the go-kart thing.
Exactly, where a retailer will often put a restriction in the deed that says basically no competitor can come in and compete with us because if it's a home improvement store, you can't sell home improvement items out of this building.
Okay.
So obviously it has to be used for some lower use.
There's a portion in the documentary where I use some video from House TV where Representative Maturin's going through this laundry list of about 50 things that are on the deed restriction and that's actually from the Escanaba Menards case.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now tell us about that case, because that may set a precedent for doing something with this.
Well, I think that might be better handled by either.
Yeah, it was a 2014 case. Originally went to the tribunal. Menards, city of Escanaba, the Menards took their Escanaba store, appealed it, went to the tribunal. Good for them for going. I have to hand it to them. After everyone else has lost, they said, we're going to give it one more shot, and they went, and they lost, of course, for the same reasons that everyone else did. And then, good for them, they appealed it against all odds.
Right.
And this time, the Court of Appeals paid attention.
Different panel of judges.
Yeah. Different judges, and they paid attention, and they...
Well, what was the core of that decision, then?
That you can't use deed-restricted sales, that these are not valid sales, because when you restrict the uses of the property, you restrict the highest and best use, and you no longer have market value.
Okay. As I understand it, they also said that the state had not presented good evidence to back up its case, right?
So, the property owner.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And also that there was no reason to believe that these properties are excessively functionally obsolete, which is one of the arguments that the
Now, what kind of precedent do you think that sets for us in this case, for for our community?
Well, I think it sets a very good precedent. The only problem with it is that it's a precedent going forward. And in our cases, for instance, the damage has already been done.
We're stuck with 30 years.
We're stuck. Yeah, and people need to understand why that is. Once those businesses have been reduced in taxable value, the impact of Proposal A, which was passed a number of years ago, restricts how much you can increase over a course of time. So it's going to be, as you said, it's going to be about 30 years before you even get back to where you were at the time. So this is going to be a long-term issue. And, as former supervisor Dennis Limita, who was with us through this case, he's now in Grand Blanc and is featured in the video as well. But his statement to the township board was, this is the new normal. This is what we're dealing with going forward. It will not change.
And you're very limited in terms of raising any new taxes.
Extremely. Okay. It's limited to 2.5%, and that's only based upon cost of living index.
Okay. And that's passed by referendum.
Passed by referendum.
Subject to legislative change.
Correct. I just want to make one additional comment with Bruce. When you were talking about the equity issue, when this all occurred, 2010, 2008, we all know what happened in 2008 with the market and with the exodus out of the Detroit area, southeastern Michigan. People were leaving, businesses were going out of business. The decision that Kimball Smith made in that Novi case may have made sense in that very limited, specific economic situation. Yeah. It made absolutely no sense to spread it statewide. None whatsoever.
Southeast Michigan in the middle of the Great Recession
absolutely.
Was really hard hit.
As an example, we've had one big box terminate here, and it was Kmart. And as Bruce mentioned, Kmart flooded the market. They closed an entire division. They flooded the market. That store in Marquette Township closed. It was closed for a couple of months, and it turned into Kohl's. So the argument that they're not usable for any other purpose is patently ridiculous.
And there are plenty of examples in other
all
states.
All kinds of them.
Let me ask this. Are other states less vulnerable than Michigan?
Well, according to the research that I did in talking with Ken Webb as a lawyer in Alabama, Michigan law was particularly weak and allowed this to occur. Now, that doesn't excuse the legislature. They could have acted, should have acted, didn't. And that's where we're at today, where you have Lowe's valued at, 20-some dollars a square foot. And in other states right next door in Wisconsin, it's 65 or so.
Well, and in their home state, it's what, 80?
Yeah.
80-something a square foot in their home state?
We've got a very short time left. I wanted to get this question in before we close the program. Any sequels or amendments planned to Boxed In?
We're still doing research on this. There's only so much we could get in before the Senate reconvenes. So yes, we're still continuing on. I don't know if it will show up in video form, but this saga continues.
Okay, I'm afraid we're out of time. We've been talking about the documentary Boxed In and the Dark Store Method of Assessment with NMU Communication Performance Studies Professor Dwight Brady, Marquette Township Manager Randy Girard, and veteran property appraiser Bruce Closser. Marquette, thank you for being here. I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on MediaMate.